Welcome to Addiction Unmasked. Here we dive deep, challenging stereotypes and asking the tough questions. My name is Dan Martin. I'm an ex-high-functioning addict, a former salesperson, and more recently a cognitive hypnotherapist. Join me each week as I share personal stories, discuss with experts, and celebrate the inspiring journeys of those who've transformed their struggles into strength. It's time to unmask addiction.
Hello, beautiful humans. I hope you're all well. This is going to be a solo episode today, and I'm conscious I haven't done any of these yet. I've only done my intro episode, which would have been maybe 3-4 weeks ago now, something like that. The main premise of this show was really to give you a window into my mind and form a deeper connection with you all, because that's what I like doing through podcast. Something that I had an insight on this week, largely thanks to my girlfriend Beth, which I'll explain in a moment, is that I have a tendency to do a little bit too much when it comes to podcast stuff. And that was evident in the recording which I did initially make for this week's episode. So for some context on this, inside my Freedom Creator community, I delivered a workshop which was built around the idea that the brain and the mind are not the same thing. And I essentially built a podcast based on that idea. But the trouble with it was, is that I put so much effort into prepping it that I really ended up with what was a script. And when I listened to it back, I was like, that's not me. That doesn't feel right. And I kind of sat with that feeling of uncertainty and discomfort for 2 days. And then yesterday I was chatting to Beth about it and I said, I'm not too sure that I feel comfortable putting this podcast episode out tomorrow. It just doesn't really feel aligned and authentic to me. And she said, well, why don't you just jump on and talk? You know, we're living a pretty cool lifestyle at the moment, and I'll get into that. But she gave an example of a very large YouTuber called Emma Chamberlain, who I didn't know up until this point, but my girlfriend Beth loves her. And she said that Emma just jumps on the podcast and delivers 20 to 30 minute long episodes where she just kind of waffles about what's going on in her life at the moment. And then that kind of gave me one of those light bulb moments where it just clicks and comes together. And I was like, hang on, I like that too. You know, there's a lot of different YouTubers out there who are essentially just doing a visual podcast where they're talking about what's going on in their life at that point in time. And I really enjoy that. It's nice to just have another human speak openly about what's going on. So that's really what I'm going to do today. I've got a couple of questions that I'm going to ask myself. As a coach, I feel I've become pretty good at asking questions, so that'll prompt me. But a lot of people on LinkedIn reach out to me and ask, Dan, it looks like you're doing some really cool stuff. How can I do what you do? And they mean coaching and therapy, as well as traveling and seeing different parts of the world, because I'm very grateful for the life that I've created here. And I guess the benefit of the podcast here is to give you a little bit more depth on where I am, what I'm doing, who I am, what life was like briefly before where I am here. If this is well received, I will just treat these solo episodes as more of a kind of series where I'll just give you some updates about, you know, what's going on in my world right now. So if I can just bring you up to speed, where am I right now? So as I record this podcast, it's Wednesday the 12th of June, it's 7:59, and I'm sat in our two-bedroom apartment in a city called Piraeus, which is about 15 minutes outside of Athens in Greece. And it's a really beautiful place. It's hot, and for those who don't know, I'm ginger, so 34, 35 degrees is 15, 20 degrees hotter than what my optimal is. The food here is incredible. The Greek hospitality is like I've never experienced before. Gifting is an enormous part of Greek culture. And to give you an example of that, when we first arrived here back at the beginning of May, the Airbnb host came running down with open arms. And then when we walked into the apartment here, she'd laid out a load of snacks, a load of drinks. Neither Beth or I drink alcohol, but she put some ouzo out there, which is a Greek national drink, and just so kind and generous. So, this is a really nice place, but you might be wondering, well, why Greece? What's this all about? Oh, to give you context as to why we are doing this whole traveling thing and seeing different parts of the world, I need to take you back to October last year. So if we go back to October 2023, at that point in time, Beth is still working for the NHS as a radiology assistant. I was doing a lot more coaching work with a business called Total Mental Performance, as well as scaling my addiction therapy business. And we are set on moving to Spain. So for those who don't know, there is a relatively new type of visa called a digital nomad visa. And there are a few hoops that you need to jump through in order to qualify for this visa, such as having a contract in place as a freelancer with a business. You need to have about 3,000 euros coming in per month, I believe, and a few other bits and pieces. But crucially, we met that criteria because I had a contract in place with this business that I was freelancing for, Total Mental Performance. So we found a law firm who were going to guide us through that process. We agreed a price, which was about £4,000 for both Beth and I. She was going to come under my visa. And then we found a property, which is in a very small, beautiful town called Javier, J-A-V-E-O, which is in southern Spain. And we put a six-month commitment into this villa, which was our absolute dream home. So everything was going well at this point, right? We had secured a property at a relatively good price because it was the winter season. We get a much lower price on the property. We've got Patchy, our dog, his passport. We're all good to go. And then 2 weeks before we're scheduled to leave, I have a regular call with one of the members of staff at this law firm that we were dealing with. And she said, "Hey, I just wanted to check in. Your criminal record is clean, right?" And I went, "No, it's not. I was arrested for growing cannabis in 2022. And I made that very clear to one of your colleagues when I had the initial call. And she said, in confidence, that it's fine. And then they turned around and said, "Ah, okay, we made a mistake there. It's actually not fine. The Spanish authorities have changed the rules. And as of now, you need to have a criminal record for the past 5 years. And I didn't have that. It was just under 2 years at that point, I think. And they basically said, "Look, we've at some point managed to get through people with a criminal record. However, based on our professional experience and knowledge, we don't think it's going to be possible. With that being said, if you want to go ahead with it, you're more than welcome to." And they put me around this pinball machine-like telephone tennis situation with various different people inside their business from the Spanish branch and, you know, all over the place. And they basically said that, "Look, we don't think that you're going to get an approval on the first time round. So at that point, you have the option to challenge it and give evidence as to why you believe you should be entitled to a visa. At which point you can challenge it again, which costs 1,000 euros. At which point you have the option to either walk away with your tail in between your legs and admit defeat, or you can take the Spanish government and authorities to court and challenge them there, which we don't think will go through. And that will cost 2,000 euros. So we kind of sat there in this really difficult position whereby the lease for the flat that we were in Manchester, we had now cancelled because we believed that we were going to Spain. We had committed to a six-month property in Spain, but we're now only legally allowed to stay in Spain for 3 months. And the Spanish visa company were saying that we were able to either make a very expensive roll of the dice, which would cost upwards of 7,000 euros all in, with no guarantee that it would work, or they said they can't help us. So we were really stuck at this point. Ultimately, what I did is kind of threw my toys out of pram a little bit and said, look, you told me in confidence that this would be okay. It's transpired that it's not. I'm not happy. I want a full refund. And they did say, we fucked up. Here's your money back. Crack on. And we got our money back. And ultimately, what we decided to do is kind of use that as an opportunity to see different parts of the world, which upon reflection has been a really awesome experience. So we did go to the Spanish property and we spent 3 months there. I have had to pay for it for 3 months without living there, which has been a bit of a nightmare. But my dad has benefited from that really quite well because he's been on 3 holidays for free outside of flights. So I'll send you an invoice for that at some point. We were then met with the challenge of the Schengen area. So this is another hoop that I didn't even know existed until I started to look into doing this traveling thing. But what it means is that there are either 28 or 29 countries inside Europe which are part of this Schengen area. And if you are a resident of one of those 28 or 29 countries, then you can travel freely throughout the entire region. So that's basically all of Europe without any restrictions. So, you know, people from Ireland, people from France, people from Spain, all the countries that you would know about, they can travel freely without any visa restrictions, which is amazing. But that thing called Brexit happened, which meant that England, Scotland, and Wales are no longer part of the Schengen agreement. Now, what that means is that we don't get that privilege of being able to travel throughout that region freely. We have to apply for a visa wherever we go, if we want to stay more than 90 days in that entire area. So we were only allowed 90 days in Spain before having to leave the entire Schengen area, which presented a bit of a logistical challenge, right? I work entirely online and I like to think that I provide a premium service to clients. Now that means that I don't feel comfortable just showing up with a laptop on a beach, like the traditional kind of nomad style. That doesn't work for me. I want to make sure that every client that I do a session with is getting a coaching experience from the work that we do together. So I took my whole office with me, essentially. So I bought a fold-out desk. I've got a nice microphone here, as you can probably hear. The camera quality is good. I like 2 monitors. I've got a light ring behind me. I've got the tripod and all this kind of stuff. Now, that may well have been possible to transport via flight, but we decided to drive. So I bought what I now call Libus, which is a 27-year-old Toyota Previa car, which if you don't know what it is, Google it. It's hilarious. It's such a funny looking thing. It looks like a glass egg. And I ripped the back seats out. So it's now a 2-seater and it's got the engine in the middle. So it's basically a 911. And then we took our whole life minus a few things that we put into storage at my dad's house. And we drove all the way to Spain, which was a journey in itself. You don't need to know about that, but wouldn't necessarily recommend it. It was quite exhausting and tiring. Felt like my brain just gave up as a result of only focusing on one thing, the road, for 5 days straight. But the end of our time in Spain comes to an end, and we are fairly limited in what options we have to get outside of this Schengen area, right? So there are a few countries which are outside of it, and not all of them are countries that you'd want to go to. You've got Bosnia, Montenegro, Albania. We decided on Albania. So what we did at the end of the 90-day period is we drove from Albania up to Barcelona. And then from Barcelona, we got the ferry to Genoa in Italy. And then we drove to somewhere else, which again escapes me. But then from there, we got the ferry from Italy to Albania in Durrës. And then we stayed in Durrës for 3 months. Now, Albania is a really interesting place, right? Because it's so far behind many other countries. They were under dictatorship rule for many, many years. A guy called Enver Hoxha was, by all accounts, a bit of a maniac. And if you want to go and do some research on him, just go and search Albania dictatorship on YouTube and you'll find lots of really interesting videos about the people there. And as a result of that, the immediate energy that we felt from people as we arrived in Albania was almost quite hostile. And we really did feel quite uncomfortable. And it took us a long time to settle in and actually be comfortable there. To the point where the day we arrived, we'd been on this ferry for like 14 hours and stupidly booked a ticket, which meant we had no windows. We were both feeling really rough and groggy. You know what it's like when you don't have sunlight for that long. Also, eating food on a really shitty ferry is not nice. When we arrived there, like literally within 5 minutes of getting out of the gate of border control, there was people knocking on the car, trying to get our attention and begging. And then we were driving through a really, really busy street. Do you know where you get an Airbnb? You can't find it. When you do find it, you can't park. When you park, you can't find the key. When you get up, the Wi-Fi doesn't work. And it's just like one thing after another, after another, after another. And we're just there going, fuck. This was supposed to be a fun and enjoyable, liberating experience. But right now, we're not feeling any of that. So it took us a long, long time to settle in, honestly. And eventually we did, but it was just a big period of adaptation. And I put that down to the fact that Albania is just quite far behind. You know, tourism is only just making a fairly big appearance in some parts of Albania as a result of Instagram and the glamorization of some of the beautiful beaches, which admittedly are lovely in Albania along the Albanian Riviera. So they're starting to become a little bit more hospitable and, you know, welcome tourists. And a lot of the Albanian people are lovely. I'm not going to sit here and say that they're bad humans. I don't believe that that is inherently true. But it was just a different place. The energy was different and not many people speak English. And we found that quite difficult. And believe it or not, there was one moment which is kind of wild. So it's quite ironic, actually, that I was living in Albania, which is, by all accounts, the cocaine capital of Europe. Many of the bars, particularly in the place where we were staying, Durres, were supposedly owned by members of the Albanian mafia. And it kind of makes sense in that area, right? Because we were in a port town, so where many shipping containers come in is Durres. So a lot of the cocaine comes in directly from Colombia or somewhere in South America into Albania, where it is then shipped out to London, Amsterdam, Belgium, wherever else. So it makes sense that there's a lot of money floating around that area. And reflecting on it now, I'd say one in every 10 cars we saw there was like 120 grand Mercedes AMG, which is wild when you think that half the roads aren't even finished. And, you know, a lot of people don't even have a car. But anyway, a lot of the bars and restaurants along the promenade, which is where we were staying, and all of the bars there are apparently owned by a very famous musician in Albania who I think his name is Noisy. I could be wrong. I believe his name is Noisy. And the ones which aren't owned by him are owned by members of the Albanian mafia, which can make them a little bit shifty at times, right? Anyway, there's one Wednesday evening when Beth and I are asleep and we get woken up by this enormous bang, a car, huge explosion. And following the explosion, it sounds like glass that goes trickles down. I think that's weird, but when I say big, it was big, like a feeling big. You know, when you kind of go to a big fireworks show and there's a really big one and it always catches you off guard. It was like that, but at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, sorry. And try not to think anything of it because there's just one explosion and then everything's okay. And then the following morning, we walk out onto our balcony, open up the door, and there's ash all over the floor. I say, Beth, come look at this. She comes out. She kind of looks a little bit shocked. And then I look on the other side of the road and there are four police cars going into this bar, which was directly opposite. I think, okay, there's clearly something going on here. And then I turn around and in parts of Albania and other countries abroad, which you may have seen, they've got the blackout shutters on the windows. And I look at that and there's a big gash in it, like maybe half a foot big gash in this metal shutter. I think, what the hell? That was not there yesterday. Anyway, try not to think too much into it. Police are there hovering around this bar all day. And then later that day, or maybe the following day, we bump into this guy called John, who lived in the same apartment block to us. He's an expat American dude from California. We called him California John. He loved smoking weed. Interesting guy. Very eccentric. And he explains in total confidence that it was a bomb which went off because there was a fight and apparently there were a few gunshots which happened as well. There's somebody who got drunk, rowdy. Bar staff and security asked him to leave. He said no. He ran up onto the roof and then started popping caps in people. Not actually shooting people, but he was apparently shooting at them, and he threw a bomb, and that's what the explosion was. And at this point, we'd been in Albania for a month, maybe a month and a half, something like that. It's amazing, the adaptability of human beings, right? Because that happened, and we just kind of took it on the chin and went, oh, well, we're alive. Nobody died, at least not that we know of. Anyway, we're okay, and we'll just keep going. And it's so strange how quickly humans can adapt to things, and that should hopefully give you an indication as to what Albania was like, at least where we were on the surface. But outside of that, I'm not going to sit here and talk shit about Albania. It's not all bad. I assure you, it's not. There are beautiful beaches, as I said a moment ago, along the Albanian Riviera, some of which look like the Maldives, and there is some parts like Samil, K-S-A-M-I-L, or Sarande, or Dhermi, D-H-E-R-M-I, which if you search them on Google, you will think that you are looking at the Maldives. It is that beautiful. And if you do get a chance, I would highly recommend that you go and see Albania now before it gets overwhelmed with tourists, because it's a busy place already. And I don't really know whether the infrastructure is going to cope with it as more and more reels are produced, because more and more people are going there to see it. It's going to get very, very crowded and probably quite unpleasant at times. So if you get a chance, I would highly recommend you go there whilst it's still cheap and still quite beautiful. Particularly the Blue Eye is a really wonderful tourist attraction, natural water spring, which we went swimming in, which was freezing cold at the time of year we went there, but definitely worth a visit. Albania is not yet part of the Schengen agreement. It may well be at some point in the future, but right now it's not. So that was our choice to go after Spain. Still paying for the property there, by the way, at this point, which is great. As you can tell, not even remotely. We spent 90 days in Albania because you get 90 in every 180 days as part of the Schengen agreement, which the UK has. After the 90 days in Albania, we had a lot more freedom, right? We had the choice to either stay in the Schengen area and go Bosnia or up to Montenegro, or we could go back into one of the countries inside the Schengen area. So we kind of had the choice, really. We thought, well, we could go up through Montenegro and into Croatia, or we could go south into Greece. And we decided to go south into Greece because we couldn't find a great deal of properties in Croatia. Greece, on the other hand, very westernized. You know, we kind of wanted that after spending a while in Albania. So we looked at a few different places. We were going to go to Thessaloniki, which is where I'd been before, but then we didn't really like the look of a lot of the properties that we saw. So we actually came down into where we are now, which, as I started with, is Piraeus, which is beautiful. We absolutely love it here. It's hot, but the food is great. The people are lovely, and we really, really enjoy it. It's something that I don't really speak about that much on social media, but is very relevant to life, really, is the fact that whilst, you know, this kind of nomadic lifestyle where I have the ability to work and live almost wherever I want, outside of the Schengen rules, of course, whilst it's wonderful, right? And I'm incredibly grateful to have this opportunity and see different parts of the world and, you know, experience great weather and all this kind of stuff. This is all great. But something that doesn't often get spoken about is the fact that it can be quite lonely. You know, it can be quite tough. And there have been moments here where both Beth and I have felt that isolation, despite the fact that we're spending a lot of time with each other. It's still quite challenging at times. You know, I don't have an enormous friendship group, and I'm quite happy about that as a result of the many, many years of partying that I did with people who, whilst they were connections, I wouldn't go so far as to call them friends. So I don't have a big friendship group. I could honestly count my true friends on three fingers. And I quite like that. I really do, because the connection which I have with these individuals is very, very strong. So naturally, I'm now in month number 7 or maybe 8 outside of the UK, and I'm starting to really miss them quite a lot. I'm also starting to miss the things that I now recognise I was taking for granted in the UK, like going for a walk in the Peak District, because we lived in Manchester, we were very close to some beautiful countryside. I miss that. I also miss being able to just jump on my bike and go for a mountain bike ride in various parts of England. If you don't know, England is almost a mecca for mountain biking. There is so much there. And I have actually got my bike with me here, but I haven't felt the urge to use it because, quite frankly, it's just too hot. It really is just too hot. You know, mountain biking is tough for anybody who doesn't know. And to go out and ride for, you know, 2, 3, 4, maybe more hours in 30-odd degree heat, I would die. And as a quick tangent on that, I think I've actually given myself PTSD through mountain biking, actually. I bought this GPS thing when I was in Spain. I thought, this is going to be great. I'm going to do so much mountain biking. I found this route that somebody else had done, which was 36 kilometers long, starting from pretty much our property where we were in Spain, which was right at the top of a hill to begin with. So starting was great. End of it weren't. I took a 500 milliliter bottle of water with me and a 1.5 liter Camelback, which is like one of those backpacks, which has a little satchel of water in it. And that was leaking the whole time. So I was barely riding at this point either, as my fitness is absolutely not where it needs to be in order to do a 36 kilometer ride, which I believe somebody did on an e-bike, but anyway, how would I know? I then got to the halfway point and thought, I am so done. I cannot possibly go anymore. But it was halfway, guys. Like, I was so exhausted. And I've never, ever in my life felt quad cramp like I had on that bike ride. So anyway, I did make it back eventually, and it took me days and days and days to recover. I was so sunburned, I was so exhausted. And I haven't actually ridden my bike since then. Now I'm reflecting on it. So maybe there's a bit of unconscious resistance there. Maybe I need to go back to therapy and do some work on that event. No. Anyway, that kind of brings us up to speed where we are here. So would love to know how you found this. This has obviously just been me waffling away at the camera and giving you an insight into what the past 7 months have been like for us. And there is obviously so many different events that I could go into over that period, but you know, I've given you the headline takeaways, and hopefully my intention here, really, if I could put one across, was that this lifestyle would be revealed to you in all of its glory, because as you know, what you see on social media is never the full picture. It just isn't. It's a very narrow window into whoever it is life. And I hope that by me sharing with you a lot more depth as I have here, it gives you a bit more of an accurate representation into what life can be like when you're doing this whole traveling thing. Bottom line is, it's fun. It's great. It's so interesting to experience different cultures, but it can be quite isolating and difficult. Should you try it? Absolutely. Is it a lifetime thing? Definitely not. I am now beginning to miss creature comforts, like the people and the places I used to go. And I'm looking forward to getting back to that. If you're listening back to this and you have questions, you want to run them past me because you're considering doing something similar in the future, then let me know. I hope you've enjoyed this. I'm sending love to everybody who's listening. Look forward to seeing you again soon.
Hey human, thanks for tuning into this week's episode. If you enjoyed the podcast, please make sure to subscribe and leave me a review. If you want to learn more about my services, you can visit my website at www.thefreedomsolution.com. You can also follow my journey and check out my content on www.linkedin.com/in/DanMartinTFS. Sending you love, be well, Dan.